The Vape Passion Show, episode 73. In this episode, we're going to talk about an e-juice review of Maryland from High Class Vape Company, an e-juice review, a DIY e-juice from one of my listeners, an old school vape review of the Smoke DC Tank V1, Vape NW is back, sort of, a case of an exploding Wismic exoskeleton mod, should the vape community hide negative stories from the FDA, and two vape shop studies show that secondhand vapor is not a concern. Hey, welcome back to the Vape Passion Show. I'm Alex, and this is episode 73. I'm recording this on Sunday, June 11th, 2017. If you're planning on buying a vape product anytime soon and you want to support the show, go to vapepassion.com/vendors and buy from one of those links. There are more than 50 popular vendors listed. I'll get a small commission for referring you, but it doesn't cost you anything extra. So not a ton happening with me this week. I got those free concentrates from realflavors.com that I mentioned last week. I got those in. I haven't tried them yet, but I hope to soon. I also got some e-juices from High Class Vape Company for a new line they're doing called Bombshell. I really like these guys. Their e-juice is affordable and generally pretty good, and they have treated me very well ever since I first reviewed their e-juices about a year ago. Bombshell is their new premium line, which is inspired by the most popular female sex icons in history, such as Marilyn Monroe, Lucille Ball, Audrey Hepburn, Elizabeth Taylor, and Sophia Loren. The labels on these bottles are really cool too. They have the picture of the woman it's inspired by, except that they're all tatted up. Not only are these women beautiful, but I also have a thing for women with tattoos, so I really dig the labels. So High Class sent me three 60ml bottles, and I can't help but try Maryland first, so I'm going to review that in this show. I'll review the other two outside of the show. So that's really it as far as new vape stuff goes. I've also been on the lookout for some old school vape products to review, but I haven't found anything yet. I know of some products that I want to try, but I can't find them anywhere not to buy, like the Silver Bullet mod from altsmoke.com. That would be awesome, but I can't find the original anywhere, at least not for a ton of money. I do have a few things lined up anyway, but I'm going to stay on the lookout so that I can keep doing my old school reviews. And if you have any suggestions, or if you come across a big sale on some old outdated products, please let me know. I also published my review of the SigPet Eco 12, which I really liked, so go check that out. And one thing that I forgot to mention in my review is that the tank base gets really hot when you vape it at really high wattage. For example, I was vaping it at 220 watts on the Predator, and it got so hot that it was making the mod really hot. So hot that I got a little worried and took it off the device. That's really high wattage and doesn't get nearly as hot at more reasonable wattages, but something I did want to point out. Oh, and I hired someone to create a logo for me. I haven't decided on how to incorporate it into my videos, but it's up on my site right now. I like the logo, but I don't like how I have it placed on my site right now. And I have been thinking about changing the design of my site anyway, so it'll probably look better eventually. But yeah, I'm excited about that. So I think it'll make my stuff look more professional. Okay, well, let's get into the topics this week. Let's start with an e-juice review of Maryland from High Class Vape Company. So High Class Vape Company sent this to me for the purpose of this review. This comes from their premium line named Bombshell. You can get it in nicotine strengths of 0, 3, 6, and 12, and it's a 70 VG 30 PG e-juice. So they describe it as seductive strawberry marshmallow fluff. All right, let's see what it smells like. Smells like strawberry milk and sweet too. All right, so I got this on the Predator 228 with the Cosmonaut RDA on top, built at 0.31 ohms with Clapton coils at 100 watts. First hit, it tastes like strawberry milk. 3 milligrams nicotine, no throat hit at all. Very, very smooth. The description says that it's a strawberry marshmallow fluff. I guess I can see that. The title tag of the page says strawberry milk e-juice. So I guess it's kind of a mix of those. It does taste like strawberry milk. It does definitely taste like strawberry for sure. Has a little bit of that milkiness, marshmallow flavor, the sweetness. So yeah, I would say that it matches the profile that they've described it as. So pretty good. Yeah, I like this one. So you can pick it up from highclassvapeco.com in 60ml bottles for $22.99. Okay, now here's something a little different. Another e-juice review, but this time for DIY e-juice from one of my listeners. So I want to say that I have some of the most amazing subscribers. I've had several people send me stuff over the last couple of years just to say thanks for me putting out the content that I do, and I'm so grateful for that. And with that said, one of my subscribers, Scott, wanted to send me a couple of his own DIY e-juice creations. He also included a couple of stickers and a handwritten note, which is awesome. So he said, "I want to take the time to thank you for your podcast. I really enjoy it and I find it to be very informative. I know you are busy with work, school, and family. It's all I can do, having a job, 4 kids, and a wife. I couldn't imagine adding school and taking the time out to make videos and podcast. But again, just know your efforts are appreciated. Anyway, I hope this package finds you well. I look forward to your next Vape Passion show. Take care, my friend." So let's give these a try. The first one up is Peach Cobbler, which is pretty self-explanatory in Scott's words. It's his take on the classic dessert.
Yeah, it smells really good. It smells like a peach cobbler. It smells nice and sweet, which is how I like it. So I'm vaping this on the Predator 228 with the Velocity RDA on top. It's built at 0.45 ohms, starting it at 100 watts. Wow, that's really good. The flavor is really good. It does taste like peach cobbler for sure. The flavor comes through really well. I really like that one. I think I'm probably going to be vaping that whole bottle really quick. All right, next up is Awesome Sauce. Oh, wow. That smells really good. I don't know if I smell any cinnamon in it, but it smells like a sweet roll for sure. It smells like a sweet baked good. Okay, so I'm vaping on the Predator 228 with the Sub-Zero RDA on top, built at 0.23 ohms, 100 watts. That one is also really good. I was kind of thinking it was going to be a very strong cinnamon roll flavor. It's not. It's a very light cinnamon roll flavor, sweet, and like I can taste the cinnamon roll with the frosting on top. It's really good. I've had cinnamon roll flavors in the past, and I thought the cinnamon was just too strong, and this one, it's perfect. These are both really good juices. And Scott did give me his eliquidrecipes.com profile. You can find him at Thumper35, and I'll also include that in the show notes if you want to check him out. He keeps most of his recipes private, but I think that these are public. Anyway, he did share them with me, so I'll put them up so you can see them if you want to make either of these. I'm definitely going to star these on my eLiquid Recipes profile so that I always have them because they're very good. No, thanks again, Scott. These are really good. Okay, one more review, which continues my new segment of old school vape reviews. So this is an old school vape review of the Smoke DC Tank V1. I bought this from myvaporstore.com for $3. It originally sold for around $13, and replacement cartomizers were about $11 for a pack of five. These tanks came out somewhere around late 2011, and people loved these tanks back in the day, so let's see how they stand up in 2017. This is how it came shipped to me. It was actually in a Ziploc baggie, so no box. I don't know if that's how they were when they first came out. This is a carto tank, which means it uses cartomizers. It's a 6 mil capacity. It comes in blue, red, silver, and black. It's about 19.6 millimeters in diameter, and that's with my measurements. And it's a glass tank wrapped in aluminum. So it looks like a pretty nice tank, actually. You can see the glass tank in there, the aluminum casing. Here's a window to see your juice levels. Has a clear plastic drip tip. And this is just one solid unit. None of this comes apart. There's some O-rings, it looks like, in there. Both sides. One ring to hold in the cartomizer, one ring to hold in the drip tip. And that's about it. There's not a whole lot to this tank. All right, so here's the cartomizer. So airflow comes in through the bottom of the cartomizer. And if you turn it, you'll see there's a small, tiny hole there. That's where the juice wicks into the cotton. I believe it's cotton. And that's it, just that one tiny hole there. All right, let's try and fill this up. So I think it would be too hard to fill this up with a bottle. I suppose you could, but it might be a little bit messy. So I'm gonna use a syringe. And that seems to be the best way to do this, a tank like this, because you have to get off to the side here, right in between the tank and the cartomizer. So syringe seems like the best way to do it. So I'm gonna use some Halo Vapor Company's Cherry Bakewell, because it has a bit of a harsher throat hit, but a very good flavor. And I think it's a thinner, like a higher PG. So it should work better in a tank like this. We'll put in 3 mils. We'll fill it. No, we'll do 4 mils. So that wasn't too difficult. A lot harder than it is to fill tanks these days, though. Okay, so these tanks, back in those days, people usually used vape pens. So that's what I'm going to use for this one. But I do want to measure the resistance before I do that. And, vape pens can't do that. So I am going to put it on a device real quick just to see what it ohms out to, because these are very high resistance atomizers. 1.53 ohms. So let's put it on a vape pen. And of course, with a vape pen, you need one of those beauty rings. Hide those threads. Makes it look a little bit better. To get e-juice into the wick, usually what you do is, actually I should have done that before screwing it on. You plug the hole on the bottom of the tank and then just suck in, so that juice sucks into that atomizer until you hear a little bit of gurgling. And that's how you know that there's e-juice in there. Yeah, I don't know. It's about what I expected. It's not a lot of vapor. Decent flavor, I suppose. I have to take a pretty long drag to get a good hit. Let's try pushing this. I don't know what the wattage, what this can really handle. I'm gonna start pretty low. Let's do 10 watts. That might be too high. You never know with these old tanks. Okay, 9 is okay. Let's try 11. I think 11, around, I don't know, 8 to 11 or 12 is probably about where you want to be. Anything more than that and you're probably going to get a dry hit, start to burn it. Because it does feel a little hot at that point. It actually seems to be wicking pretty well too. So the Smoke DCT isn't that bad. It produces decent vapor, it looks nice, and the flavor isn't all that bad either. The flavor isn't great, but it's not terrible. It is difficult to fill, though, which I think is a big con. Honestly, the only reason to get this would be to experience what vapors used in the early days of vaping. If you're looking for a low wattage tank with much better flavor, go get something like the Nautilus Mini. But if you're interested in this tank, you can still pick it up for really cheap. I paid $3 from myvaporstore.com, and they actually still sell replacement cartomizers to go with it, which are only about a dollar for a pack of five. Okay, enough reviews. Now let's talk about something else. Vape and W is back, sort of. If you haven't heard, or if you missed me talking about it a couple of weeks ago, VapeNW.com lost their entire business when the strip mall that they were located in burned down. It was a total loss. Well, they got back up on their feet really quick and are already back in business in a new location. They actually sold their business to a new owner, which a lot of people on Reddit are pretty upset about because VapeNW didn't mention this in their original message when they said that they were back. But VapeNW wasn't really hiding this. They did mention it in an email that went out to their email list, so I don't think that they were intentionally trying to hide anything. They did confirm later that they are still the original staff, but they sold ownership to another company. With a little digging, Redditors discovered that this new company is UVapor LLC, which unfortunately has a bad reputation of being corrupt, and according to some Redditors, they have even been recently raided by multiple federal agencies. I can't find any information online about that, so I don't know for sure. But I don't know why anyone would lie about it. Even with the same original staff, new ownership might mean a new managerial direction and maybe even new prices, which might not be as good as what they used to have. But one thing VapeNW has been known for was poor customer service. So hopefully that's one thing that changes with the new owners. There's no telling yet what role UVapor will play here, but if it's anything like what their history has shown, at least what Redditors are saying, it's probably not good. All right, moving on. A case of an exploding Wismec exoskeleton mod. So I've been seeing this story passed around several vape groups on Facebook, but someone posted a picture of their Wismec exoskeleton mod burned up and melted after some sort of battery failure. Now I do want to point out that this is currently an isolated issue and might not be typical with the exoskeleton in general, but I do think it's worth pointing out just so that anyone who has already purchased one of these can be aware and cautious. Okay, so Jared Gregory, who runs a vape shop in Indiana, posted a picture of the exoskeleton 300 watt device, pretty much destroyed, and explained that it started on fire and then nearly exploded. Some people have questioned if the batteries he used were safe and thought that he might have pushed them too far. He did explain though that he was running three LG Brownies, which are LG HD2s, and are capable of 20 amps each. When running in parallel, which is what the exoskeleton runs, the amperage is combined, which means that these batteries specifically should be able to handle up to 60 amps total, and Jared was running the device at 100 watts. Battery Mooch also chimed in on this discussion and confirmed that he was only drawing about 11 amps per battery, so not an issue at all. Mooch believes that it was either a damaged battery wrap or a direct short in the internal wiring of the mod. Jared also confirmed that he was not charging them internally in the device and that he only uses external chargers. He said that these were brand new batteries and did not have torn wraps. He was using it all night and nothing out of the ordinary happened. He took his last hit 5 minutes before the fire and it was just sitting there next to him when it happened. It didn't fall over or drop at any point. It then started to auto fire for about 3 seconds and then it lit up. Mooch believes that the auto firing might have been a symptom that appeared after whatever the real failure was, because auto firing still wouldn't have pushed those batteries beyond their limits. So really, we don't know what the real issue was here. It might have been a freak accident with the batteries, or it might have actually been a problem with the device. If it was a problem with the device, we'll probably hear more stories about it soon. But this brings up another interesting issue. Should the vape community hide negative stories from the FDA? There have been a lot of people saying that we shouldn't post stuff like this because it makes the vaping industry look bad. I see this come up every time a story about exploding batteries shows up on Facebook, but I don't really agree with this line of thinking. It's true, it probably does make the industry look bad, but we are also a community that has done a great job of self-regulating, and these are the perfect opportunities to self-regulate. If we don't put these companies on blast, they're going to continue making low quality and dangerous products. It's negative reinforcement. If we let them do it, they'll keep doing it. I also think that if this is a real issue with this device, we need to let the community know so that nobody gets hurt. At this point, we are way beyond preventing the FDA and other government entities from imposing regulations on us. It's going to happen no matter what. It's just a matter of time. The government knows that there are safety problems like this, and that's why Duncan Hunter's proposed bill covers safety precautions. The government already knows this. Eventually, there are going to be safety regulations, and as much as it's going to suck for many of us, we might not have access to things like mech mods, 200 plus watt devices, or who knows, even refillable tanks. Yeah, that's going to really suck, but having a life-saving product that people can use in place of smoking is better than nothing at all. I know we would all like to pretend like stuff like this doesn't happen and that we should hide it from the FDA, but the fact of the matter is that hiding it doesn't do any good. Intentionally hiding something like this would make us look even worse.
Now, what if a device really does have a shorting issue and it starts a house fire or blows up in someone's face? There's no hiding that. And I think it's better to look out for the safety of our fellow vapers rather than worry about what the FDA thinks of us. All right, and finally, two vape shop studies show that secondhand vapor is not a concern. So the California Department of Public Health investigated the potential negative health effects of secondhand vapor and found that it results in minimal exposure to bystanders. Earlier this month, it was reported that they conducted air sampling and personal exposure monitoring in a vape shop while employees and customers regularly vaped. The shop didn't have any active ventilation system going, and clouds of vapor were clearly visible during testing. So here's what they found. They did not detect nicotine, glycerol, diacetyl, 2,3-pentanedione, acetylbutyryl, acetoin, acetone, ethylbenzene, MP-xylene, O-xylene, toluene, acetaldehyde, acetonitrile, alpha-pinene, benzene, chloroform, D-limonene, methylene chloride, methyl, methacrylate, N-hexane, or styrene. Ooh man, that's quite a list. So that was in a vape shop with people regularly vaping and without ventilation. If you've ever been in a vape shop, you know how cloudy those places can get. That's about the highest exposure levels you could place yourself in, and they didn't detect any of those toxins in there. They did, however, detect formaldehyde at 7.2 parts per billion, which Dr. Michael Siegel says is consistent with normal indoor and outdoor levels under baseline conditions. Now, this part kind of confuses me because I'm not sure what baseline conditions he's referring to. The studies I've seen show formaldehyde typically around 0.05 to 0.5 ppm. But despite this, according to the CDC, chronic health effects from formaldehyde don't form until around about 800 parts per billion. So that 7.2 parts per billion detected in this study is nowhere even close. They also detected small amounts of ethanol and isopropyl alcohol, but I don't know at what levels or if it's bad. Dr. Michael Siegel didn't seem to think it was an issue. This study, by the way, again, was performed by the California Department of Public Health, an organization known to be extremely anti-vaping, and even they couldn't twist the data of these results to make vaping look bad. And then a second test was performed by the National Institute for Occupational Health, NIOSH. Also in a vape shop. They tested the air for formaldehyde, acetaldehyde, and three other chemicals commonly referenced in causing popcorn lung. So NIOSH found that all of these chemicals were within their exposure levels. Just like with the California Department of Public Health study, they found formaldehyde and acetaldehyde to the same as in typical non-vaping homes. The other chemicals were either not detected in samples or slightly detected in some samples. Neither of these studies are published online yet, but the information was reported by Dr. Michael Siegel. From what I've read, these are ongoing investigations, and the full results will be published within the next couple of months. If these studies can't detect hazardous chemicals in a vape shop, secondhand vapor while you're out walking on the street is obviously nothing to worry about. So when you have some random ignorant person telling you that vaping is the same thing as smoking and that you're exposing them to toxic secondhand vapor, mention these studies. Okay, that's all I have for this week. You'll find the show notes for this episode on vapepassion.com. Just do a search for episode 73. You can follow me on Twitter at vapepassion, and I'm also on Facebook. If you like this weekly show, please consider giving me a thumbs up on the video and subscribe to my channel if you're not already a subscriber. You can also subscribe to the podcast version of this show on either iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play. If you'd like to get notifications of new reviews or of this show, you can sign up to receive my weekly email on vapepassion.com. And if you have any questions or comments, feel free to email me or leave a comment on one of my videos. All right, I'll see you next week.